hitting record, don't anybody say anything horribly embarrassing or something that will get you fired or anything else. Alrighty. Sorry, wrong window. Diving right in. Our first one, potentially, I kind of assumed that it would pass. So it's 9:85. I assumed that by the time we got here, the Travis build would already be done, but it doesn't look like it is. PR 9:85 from Andy.
Yep.
It looks like it might not work on OS X.
Nope, that's not the issue.
No.
The reason you expected this to happen and it hasn't happened is that all the Travis Mac platforms appear to be down at some point.
So, okay, assuming
I built this locally
on
OS X with great success.
Okay, so we should merge this at some point later on.
We can give it a little while to see if we can if Travis OS X builds come back.
It's not blocking anything. It doesn't immediately need to be merged for emergency reasons.
But assuming what I meant was when that comes back and it passes and everything and we're much more sure, then that's looking good to merge.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's
also, extra thanks to Andy on this one because he plugged away at something and really found the core problems and managed to fix this with various changes, which is really good.
Nice. Okay, we got issue 980.
Yeah, so I'm looking at that right now, actually. I haven't.
Oh, okay, so I think you can assign yourself at this point, but I will assign.
Oh, yeah, okay, thank you.
Where the hell are you? A. Turley, okay. And in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In progress. Okay. All right. Well then. I assume then if you're looking at it, that we don't need to discuss it. Is that reasonable, or do you want to?
Yeah, that's reasonable. I will probably have some questions later, but.
All right. 979. That's the assigning a remote embedded field to local field causes assertion failure in GC.
Yeah, that's a nasty one.
And,
oh, boy, I hadn't seen this.
And this is a fun one because I can both confirm and not confirm it.
Say what?
Well, if you look at my comment, you'll see that when I run with the debug build, I get this. When I run with the release build, I do not get it. I don't even get a seg fault. I was expecting a seg fault.
My guess is that the assert is guarding against something more subtle, so that's why you don't necessarily get a crash, but I don't know, like a large program doing this, it's doing something dangerous that might crash eventually.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at that. Yeah, so let's go down there. 365. Oh.
Huh. So
wait, no. I'm not. If we haven't seen this object, if it's an object reached from another view. Should this assert still? Sylvan, should this assert?
This is simply wrong.
This
is interesting. So we've sent it C1 ISO. So this is very interesting. We've sent it C1 ISO.
Yes.
But the reason we didn't have foo in there, well, this is very interesting. Okay, Do you guys mind if I go through this?
No, by all means, please do.
Okay, so when you send something that's isolated, you walk, you call the trace function and you walk the structure of the thing that's being sent. And in this case, the structure of it is an embed that has no fields. So an embed, you don't mark the embed because it's part of the thing, although you would mark any fields in the embed. In this case, there aren't any. That means main increments its local reference count for the C1 that it allocates, sends it off to C2. C2 says, oh, great, I've received this. I increment my foreign reference count for the C1 that it receives. Then it says, oh, well, we're going to use this thing up, and we're going to take the field out of it, and we're going to assign it. Isn't that nice? And then the next time we GC, we go through and we say, oh, foo, hey, wait a minute. I've never seen foo before. I've never seen that. I, that address isn't even in my, I don't have a foreign reference count for it. And in fact, it will have, in the meantime, generated a reference decrement, a release message to main for that C1. And since there is no foreign reference count for the embedded foo, main will go ahead and GC it. And C2 now has an invalid foo that may be stomped over with memory, have its memory stomped over. So, possible fixes are,
yeah, so that would explain, Sean, why you didn't see a crash.
Yep.
Crash, you won't see a crash unless something's overwritten that memory.
Exactly.
Memory already.
So we've got some P, we get the chunk for it. When we recurse, we really want to be recursing on the correct object. Thank you very much. So that would be bad. So we want to store the correct P. Oh, interestingly, oh, this gets even more fun. What the code will actually do in the presence of a release build is that it will send an acquire message for that field, and everything will work perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is wrong is the assert. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me make some notes in here.
So, okay. So, I was at least vaguely right when I looked at this. So, let's see how, I'm waiting for this to go totally off the rails for my brain. So, go ahead. Because at least locally, right there in that one little block, it looks, if you take the assert out, it looks like it's doing the right thing to me. It's immutable.
Yep, it's completely Sucker. Right.
Yeah.
It's the assert. I'm going to assign this to me. It is ready for work and easy.
All righty. That's not going to happen very often where I look at him like, hey, wait, okay. 973.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
It took me upsettingly long to figure this one out.
Thank you for finding it. That is... So Where does it die? Did anyone do a backtrace on this?
I can.
Oh no, Protonus has some notes here.
Yeah.
It looks like Protonus did it in spirit. He did it in the chicken. Yeah, he at least mentioned it's in what file and function it's in.
Yeah, yeah, and actually the explanation is very good, especially your explanation, Joe, about how we are not allowing B underscore final or new underscore final. And that's interesting. And I almost wonder if the right solution is to absolutely allow those things. In check finalizer, because what it could do is if it looks at the thing and it could just allow them, and only if it's a function does it go and check all those other things that it needs to be.
Wait, what?
Okay, let me try that again.
So rather than disallowing everything, you would allow everything and just only make it a finalizer if it's a
if it fits all this stuff. But that seems a bit rough too, now that I think about it.
Yeah, someone might think that they've defined a finalizer when in actuality.
Exactly. Exactly so. So that's a bit confusing. So there's the other magic name is underscore init. Is also magic.
Did you see Sean's message at the end about possibly using a double underscore so that these magic names would be something that you couldn't use as a function under
In order to do that, we'd have to mess around with Elixir to make them keywords because double underscore is not allowed. And actually, that would be quite complex. That could theoretically cause conflicts in the symbol naming code in the code generator, which uses double underscores to distinguish things.
So
triple underscores. Three.
No.
Just to point out, the magic symbol for the location of the current code is double underscore LOC.
Yeah, but it's not a method.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm just
On the other hand, thinking about it, double underscore final and double underscore init. I don't think would cause a problem in the code generator. And in fact,
So I guess here's a kind of remaining question about that. Is there a valid use case for somebody finding a finalizer or initializer for that matter, and then also calling it explicitly under some circumstances where they'd need to be able to call something dot underscore final?
It goes and checks and
or this sure. underscore final, I guess.
Right. So currently, there's actually a rule in lookup.c that says you're not allowed to look up the finalizer. And if we made it double underscore, we wouldn't have to have that because it wouldn't be valid there. But then we'd have to allow that keyword in a, as a function name. Ooh, that's, ooh, no, we don't want that. Oh, ooh, yuck. So that's lexing hell. I think maybe we're overthinking this.
You know, I have to say, I don't think I ever thought you would say, well, yes, slapping another underscore on the front of it is overthinking it.
What? That's, it's quite complex to slap another underscore on there. That's non-trivial.
Yes, but saying slap another underscore on the front of it doesn't really sound like a lot of thinking.
Well, in the sense of, I think probably what we should do is leave the behavior as it is, where underscore final can't be, we leave all of the checking as it is, because if you've named a method or a constructor underscore final, then they may have thought they defined a finalizer and they didn't. But we fix the problem instead by allowing it as a field name by fixing the code in entity finalizer. So leave check finalizer the way it is, but in entity finalizer,
so you're not worried about somebody thinking they've defined a finalizer by creating
a field. So instead, an entity
final field that is a lambda.
Yeah. Not worried about that. Because no, right? It's a field. And then all we would need is between lines 197 and 199, we would look at the entity, say, if ASTID AST bang equal to TK fun, return true. We're done here. And that's the full fix for this. Does that seem okay?
That seems reasonable to me. You want to drop the old comment in for that?
Yep, doing it now.
Cool. And then the next one is 964.
Also, I just told it that that code was pony because I'm so used to doing triple backtick pony. It's not pony. It's totally C. Does someone want to PR that, or does someone, or do the people want me to?
Wait, PR what?
973.
Well, Praetonus is still assigned to, so maybe he'll want to do it. Given your description of action.
Cool.
If not, he can unassign himself and someone else can do it.
Awesome. Sorry, what was that? Which issue?
Uh, 964.
What? This thing confuses me.
So, okay, we have the equal, all right, which is taking a tuple and would appear that match is somehow trying to use that.
Take a tuple, it takes a union.
Oh, sorry, a union, yeah. takes a unit, and which I don't understand why, if you, all the problems go away if you move the equal. I don't understand what match is doing that should, it should even try to use that.
Yeah, what is happening there?
You're saying match A against A, so it's constructing an A and then calling structural equality on the new A that it constructed and the other new A that it constructed.
Right, but then apparently it's trying to use that equal?
Yeah, because that's what structural equality is.
But equal is using the equatable interface, right?
I don't know what you're talking about. Not necessarily. It's just an EQ method. What do you mean is using?
Okay, so when we do the match and it tries to compare them, it just looks for an EQ method, a method named EQ, which is on the thing?
That's it.
And it doesn't care what the signature is?
It does indeed care quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
So the thing, the pattern must be valid in the signature because it's calling pattern.eq operand. And that has to be type safe, and it checks that.
Okay, so this works because A is in there, even though we have our funky,
yeah,
or B.
But what I'm confused about, right, is in gen pattern. This is in gen pattern eek.
Wait. In which file?
Yeah, gen pattern eek is in gencall.c line, and it's on line 407.
Okay.
That it crashes. Because it's claiming that the package because the pattern type is a union type.
And
because of course it is. This code is wrong. That I gen pattern eek. I feel okay saying that since I wrote it. Why is the pattern type pattern type is somehow being set quite wrongly here. That's the issue. The pattern type is being set somehow. Okay, so this code isn't wrong. All right, let me make a note on this one and assign it to me.
Okay. All right, you writing your note?
Yeah, there we go.
So, the one agenda, one last agenda item we had for discussion before we can open up to anything else was, so I was working with WriteBuffer last week and found that it was missing a rather important part of it, which is it has chunks, which is an array internally, but you had no way to reserve the number of chunks ahead of time, which could result in lots of memory allocations that wouldn't be needed. And I went ahead and opened a PR for it, and as Joe rightly pointed out, at least for how we have the RFC process right now, that is sidestepping the RFC process, which is not a good thing. So that's actually not the only thing now. We've done this with two or three other things, which are now in the pony sentence C fork with small changes like that. And when talking to Joe, I feel like, and Joe, feel free to chime in on this, but at least in the case of WriteBuffer, leaving others aside, that it raised like the question in my mind of WriteBuffer. We went ahead and Andy wrote a WriteBuffer and we put it in, but nobody'd really exercised it yet. This didn't come from stuff being exercised. And I think a lot of other things that go through the RFC process, if it's not like somebody's already written the code and is using it and then opens an RFC for it, we're going to run into similar things where we overlook things in the API or the API doesn't quite work right when it goes through it. And if we've already accepted something into the standard library, and then we could potentially move really slowly on fixing problems with the API or where things were left out of the API, which is, to me, different than doing breaking changes on the API. And I feel like we should talk a little about what does that mean for the RFC process and perhaps maybe what we might want to adjust or change on that in any kind of fashion.
If I can ask a question here. I think what you're saying sounds reasonable, although I would say that I've the WriteBuffer, let's see. I guess it got some exercise in some code that I was writing beforehand. When you're talking about exercising it, what do you think that would look like?
More use than what it got. I mean,
to me, that means the inevitable several months, if not years of usage before everyone is actually happy with an API. So that there's always going to be some level of change that has to happen on stuff as we settle into it. So I don't think it's a question of, oh, this wasn't used at all. Quite far from it. I think this is sort of inevitable as things get picked up and start getting used.
Yeah. So I'm kind of coming at this from a perspective of, you know, like just like how is the RFC process kind of working for us? And, you know, if the RFC process was smooth and quick and everyone was happy, then I think we wouldn't feel the need to try to, you know, get around it for small cases, because small cases could be sort of approved quickly and move through the RFC process, you know, quickly enough to where everyone's happy with it. And there's also, I guess, that's one point of discussion, I think, is how is the RFC process working for us? Another point of discussion is just my typical harping about, like, when you're developing a third-party library, you have, you know, complete control over it and can, you know, put it through its paces, and other people can adopt it and put it through its paces and contribute in whatever fashion. Then, you know, when it becomes part of the standard library, I think there's like kind of a higher bar for that. And I think things are always going to move at least a little bit more slowly. But I would like them to move as fast as they can while still meeting the goals of the RFC process. But I think even if we optimize the RFC process to move as fast as it can, if it's meeting its goals of getting a bunch of community input before solidifying a change, then I think it's always going to move slower than, you know, a lone developer or, you know, a team of a couple developers that is scratching their own itch, making their own library, making it work well, possibly having other people adopt it, and then sort of as it's become solid, you know, look at moving it in. I mean, WriteBuffer is a little bit different because it's part of, or, you know, arguably part of the functionality that's already in there. But sort of going back to the first point about how the RFC process is working, to me it feels like it's moving now slower than it needs to, and I'd like to try to figure out how we can make it move faster and make people sort of happier with the speed and the process in general. Maybe the answer is we need to figure out how to increase participation, but I don't know.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Silva?
I think it sounds good to try and have it be a faster process. You know, this isn't C++, so we don't have to go several years between iterations. I don't know how to do that right. I'm willing to try literally anything in terms of if you guys think it's a good idea.
So, Joe, do you have any thoughts on it moving faster? We should think about it?
I think one factor that is coming into play is that I think questions can kind of go unanswered for a long time in RFCs, and I think that is sort of a product of all of us being stretched a little thin with other activities. So to a certain extent, I feel like it's something that is a symptom of our general busyness that an RFC can sit open and without settling in. I don't know. And maybe we need to think about the more aggressively moving to the final comment period, or I think there are even a few RFCs now that are technically out of the final comment period, but we still haven't taken any action on. I'm not sure what we can do maybe we just need to find out how to make that a priority to sort of kind of daily check in with the RFCs, see whether there are any dangling, you know, concerns, figure out if there's anything, any input we can add as sort of just like a part of our daily routine.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I mean, just forcing ourselves to get in the habit sounds like a good thing to do. I know I'm not very good at looking at that, so I'm actually going to create a calendar event for myself right now.
Awesome.
How does that sound for the next week starting tomorrow? We all try to, one, first catch up on those and then check in daily and move the rest of them through. I would say one additional part of that is that we didn't do this week, but we could start next week for the first thing in any sync meeting is anything which has been in final comment period for like over the last week, we handle that first at the sync meeting. Reasonable?
I like that idea.
Yeah.
And in fact, maybe we should do, would it be dumb to say handle RFCs first, then PRs, then issues?
So RFCs which are in final comment, which have got to the end of final comment?
Not necessarily. Possibly also any other RFCs that whoever's setting the agenda wants to put on the agenda, or anyone else wants to nominate for the agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I would just comment that I think in the past there was some reluctance to discuss the RFCs on these sync calls due to the fact that the discussion was supposed to take place in the GitHub so that it had full, you know, transparency and everyone could go back and reference the discussion. But since we're recording these now, maybe it makes sense to make the RFCs a more prominent part.
I personally would like to start with just the let's do the RFCs that have finished final comment, and let's see what that does to the length of the sync calls and everything. I think if we're regularly discussing RFCs, there's several of them open right now. I'm not sure that we would get to anything else.
Okay. Let's try that.
It just for like next week.
And if, And if we're all making a daily effort to try to sort of check in with the RFCs, then maybe it'll be a less of a problem. Maybe it won't even make it to the sync call. You know, we would already have all interacted with that RFC by the time the sync call came around.
Yeah. So my one other thing, and I don't have a solution to this, but something for people to think about. I think that with a lot of things that come out of the RFCs, the first implementations are probably going to be incorrect, right? In a lot of cases. And I personally think that there's a big difference between it came out incorrect and we want to change like the signature of existing methods versus where, like in the case of the write buffer one, I really feel like that's more of a oversight in the original one, and it's kind of a bug, and adding a new method to fix a bug in that case is somehow, it's different than, oh, we need to change an existing method. I don't know what the rubric on that is, but I feel like there's something more in terms of what needs to go through RFC and what doesn't that we need to think about, or that when things first get PR'd and implemented after an RFC, there's some kind of incubation process or something that things go through. I have no idea what it is, but it's something I would just like to put into people's heads to think about, and we could discuss on another occasion.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well discuss it a little bit now, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what you say is interesting. I mean, I think there might be some kind of distinction we can draw between something that is kind of like fundamentally a new concept versus something that is a sort of refinement or reaching toward reaching toward what the original concept should have been in some way that shouldn't upset any of the people who signed off on the original RFC. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a distinction we can draw there. That could be something useful, and I think we should, you know, think about it. I think I like that idea better as something that is not attached necessarily to time. Like, for example, if you found this write buffer issue, 5 months later, it seems like that it's not so much the time aspect that's important, but the sort of the nature of it, that you are sort of just like filling in a tiny oversight versus introducing some new concept. I kind of like that. I mean, when you talk about incubation, I sort of see third-party libraries as a good incubation, but again, we don't have a package manager. But I don't know, maybe we should think about making some kind of amendment to what qualifies for an RFC based on something that we can pin down the nature of it. I don't know how other people feel about that.
I like the idea of it's a filling in thing, Joe, right? And this got interesting to me because I was like, I feel like what happened when I started looking at making code which uses write buffer go faster, which is when I was like, oh, I can't set that chunk size thing there. I need to be able to do that in order to get better performance out of this. That's one of those things where it's like, and I was like, and we could just, I considered it a bug at the time, but when I thought about it after, you know, you and I like exchanged a couple emails, I was like, man, this could happen with anything that we have go through the RFCs. And, you know, like the crypto one, if they come up with something, you know, when people really start using it, I think we shouldn't have to go all through a whole nother RFC to fix those things that we find which are in the spirit of the original and non-breaking.
Yeah, so, I think what you mentioned about performance is probably, maybe that's a sort of a concrete criterion we can talk about, is that if this is something, if we're treating performance like a bug in general, and you see that there's an API change that, like you said, is non-breaking and can improve. So, if it doesn't break existing code and you've shown that it can improve performance if people use that, you know, change in API. Maybe we can treat that like a performance bug.
I think that's a good idea. I think also we should be open to the idea of that there are API bugs. Just because the API has gone out there, there are breaking changes that we want to be able to accept, especially as we aren't at the point of having a 1.0 release yet. So we're not really at the point of applying semantic versioning yet. And I think...
I'm fine with that answer.
Yeah, I think that there's... one that came up today when I was talking to Sean is array.remove. Array.remove looks as if it ought to return the stuff you just removed as a new array, but it doesn't. It chops that stuff out and returns the original array with the stuff chopped out to allow for call chaining. That kind of looks like an API bug to me. Maybe it's not. Maybe you didn't want that allocation. Maybe it's fine the way it is, but I'm just sort of using it as an example. Where if we got that API wrong, do we really want an RFC process for that? Or is that open an issue and say, this is an API bug? I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe there's another sort of concrete criterion we can apply to stuff like that where we call it, it's a principle of least surprise bug.
Oh, I like that.
So you have API changes that are critical to having performant applications. That's one category of things that should be sped along. And then API changes that are sort of that we can agree are violating a principle of least surprise.
I think that's excellent.
So I think we're coming up with a number of interesting things that we could potentially flesh out in the RFC thing for when stuff doesn't have to go through. I feel like we would come up with more of these, right, as we go forward potentially. I think it would make sense for existing things to have either right now it's active core people or core in committers to be able to look at a particular case and elevate that up and say, you know what, we think that this is something where this doesn't have to go through RFC. And here's why, and we're going to update the RFC process to take into account these cases that we didn't think of when we put this together.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that that's flexible.
Yeah, and I think as long as we take that approach that you said of, we say, here's why we did it, and here's the new rule we're introducing so that people can know what to expect going forward.
So that it's not ad hoc on every basis. It's right. The flexibility to add the rule.
Yes. So,
I like it.
So does that rule get added by, like, two of the three of us right now, or do we extend that out to people who have commit as well and we get a quorum from that?
I think quorum and commit is a nice group.
Yeah, and I think maybe what we can do is, you know, just to, in the interest of, you know, not slowing things down too much, because I kind of worry about that these days, we can have, you know, that person can act with autonomy to apply to change the rule, and then at the next SIG meeting we'll talk about that and talk about the reason for why it was done and sort of just sort of ratify and say, yes, you know, we think this is a good rule to keep going forward.
Yeah, I like that. But go for it right now, and then
yeah.
If we need to say oops, then we say oops later.
Okay, so right, so we do optimistic rule change. We let anybody who's a committer or core say, yes, this should be a case where we change the RFC one and we're going to add a rule for it. We discuss it at the sync to verify that, or otherwise we specifically say, no, we don't want to do that. And we know that in the future for any number one that comes up like that, we don't. And in the case of where maybe somebody, we all decide it was a poor decision, maybe we revert that particular thing. Yes?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the optimistic nature of it. I think that's something that we should think about, you know, yeah.
I'm a big fan of optimistic stuff like that. Yes. All right. In that case, I'm going to open a couple PRs.
Awesome.
both of which are API changes, but are non-breaking that we put in for some level of performanceness, and people can decide whether they meet the criteria. One is that chunks bug. The other is in the JSON stuff, the ability to turn off pretty printing in a way which doesn't break the existing API and slightly cuts down on the amount of data which gets generated as part of that. Which if you were, say, writing an application which is currently shipping an awful lot of JSON around, adds up.
So here's another question about the maybe a test of how clear cut this criteria is. In everyone else's opinion, the RFC that I opened about string and array slices that are shared with the original reference, which I was calling trimmings, that is definitely something that I think falls in the category of performance-oriented API change, but it is also kind of a new concept.
I think, please correct me if I'm not understanding it right, but I think the only thing that I think is interesting there that wouldn't be a straight-up, it's a performance API, let's just rock and roll it, is the impact on FFI, that string becomes counted and is no longer directly sendable to an FFI function.
That's a part of it.
Yeah. So I think all the others, totally performance API stuff, that bit worth discussing. And I owe you looking over that again. Sorry.
Cool.
Oh,
I think that's a good point.
Right. You mean the thing that we were discussing before this call started, Sylvan?
That'd be it. Yep.
Apparently we're all circling around the same problem. Yeah. I agree with what Sylvan said there. I mean, if it wasn't for the FFI impact, I think this would just be a straight up PR.
That makes sense.
And that with the FFI impact, that is potentially big breaking. But I think that this personally, so on number two, I think that number two, once Sylvan weighs in a little, it's in my mind, it's good to go. On to final. All right. So I guess I have some more. I will write up all of this stuff and I will do a PR against the RFC repo, and a couple people can check it out and see if they agree that I correctly captured what we've stated here. Sound good?
Yep.
Sounds good. Yep. And thanks everyone for talking this over. I think it's a great amendment.
Yay.
And it's non-subjective, I hope, which is a good part.
Okay. Do we have anything else to go over before I wander off to this interview that I have to do in 10 minutes? Bueller? Joe, do you have anything?
I got nothing.
Sylvan?
Nope, I'm good.
Theo?
Nope.
Felix?
Not today.
Andy?
Good to go.
Okay, all right. Thank you, everyone. See you next week. For those of you who are Canadian or American and have a holiday coming up real soon, enjoy your holiday. And for anybody else who might have a holiday that I don't know about.
Happy non-specific holidays, everyone.
Yes, non-specific ones.
Bye, all right. Y'all.
Bye.